Morning, everybody. Deep appreciation to the Lupin Foundation, Michael and Esty Lupin. Daf Yomi is learned in loving memory of Lois Lupin Saltzman. Okay, today's Daf is Daf Nun Vav. We are in Nun Hamad Beis, and we are continuing in the Gemara's discussion regarding an understanding of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that there's only one stand in the Heichal. Okay, Kohen Gadol is going to have to put down the blood. He's got two bowls of blood, and he's only got two hands, but not even two hands, really just one hand. He's got to do zrika. So in other words, but he's got two bowls of blood. And he needs to consider the dam shel par and the dam shel seir. So and the problem is that he's got to put it down. So fine. So that's the problem. The solution is very simple. Get a stand. As we already discussed a number of times, the bowls in the base of Mikdash didn't have bottoms. They just were simply cone shaped, and so therefore and by design. Because they didn't want the bowls to ever be placed on the floor, because if the bowls are put on the floor, so then the blood's going to congeal. So by design, the bowls are meant never to rest. However, again, the Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and in the Heichal, one man operation. He's getting no help. He's getting no support. So he needs a stand. He needs it. So how many stands are there going to be in the Heichal? So the Tanakam of our Mishnah said two stands. You look back at the Mishnah, Nun Gimel Amud Beis, so the Gemara quotes the Shita of the Tanakama, which is that there's going to be two stands. So one for the bowl of the bull, and the other one for the blood of the bull, and the other one for the blood of the goat. Easy. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Not two stands, but rather one stand. Okay, so what do you do? But that's also very simple. What you do is that you're just simply going to, you have the blood of the bull, you're going to pick up the blood of the goat, and you're going to put down the blood of the bull, and you just keep alternating, but you only have one stand, not two stands. And so the question on the table is a really simple question. Well, why not two stands? Well, what's wrong with two stands? So the Gemara yesterday offered a suggestion within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and that is maybe Rabbi Yehuda is not into this labeling. Okay, in other words, well, we know that if we want to keep our life organized, so we label things. We label our keys. We try to keep everything nice and organized, and we label. And it could very well be that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of labeling. He doesn't hold of tzeiva. That was a Gemara suggestion yesterday, and that's why two stands and just simply put a label. This stand holds the blood of the bull, and this stand holds the blood of the goat. Maybe he's not into labeling, and he feels that labeling is not going to be a good safeguard to making sure everything is organized. Okay, that was a suggestion. This suggestion was brought to us by on the top right, both the bottom and the top of Nun Hamad Aleph and Hamad Beis. So the right, this was Abaye, Amalei Abaye, right? Okay, Rav Yosef. Okay, Abaye, Rav Yosef. Leis like Ksiva, he doesn't hold the Ksiva. That is one suggestion within Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara basically dismisses this suggestion. Why? Because we have a Mishnah Shkalim. The Gemara in Nun Hamad Beis quotes the Mishnah Shkalim, and the Mishnah says, you know, there would be 13 pushkas in the base of Mikdash. So 6 would be for Nadava. And what about 7? 7 of them would be labeled. This one would be, did we do the Mishnah yesterday? No, we didn't do the Mishnah. Okay, Meisvei. Let's do it. Okay, we're on Nun Hamad Beis. We're up to the Mishnah in Shkalim, so now we're going to get to see the Mishnah inside. And basically, can I just give it away? The Mishnah basically is going to say that there are 7 pushkas and they're labeled. And Rav Yehuda is not going to argue with that Mishnah. So Rav Yehuda is quite comfortable with labeling. So we're going to have to say a different shot within Rav Yehuda. And now mind you, I'm sorry, before we start with the Mishnah in Shkalim, just one other point that we need to review and just go over. And that is another statement that was made by Rav Yehuda, which the Gemara is also trying to tackle. And that is Rav Yehuda said that, you know, in the Beis HaMikdash, somebody offered birds. It either came as an adava, or it came as a chova. It either came as a donated bird offering, or an obligatory bird offering. Who offers? Who makes donative bird offerings? Whoever wants to. It's an adava. Who makes obligatory bird offerings? Somebody who needs to, like a zava, a yoledes. In other words, and there are other occasions as well where a person is obligated to bring a bird offering. Now, bird offering is a pair of birds. One is a chatas, and the other one's an ola. What Rav Yehuda is of the opinion, and you saw this on the bottom of Nun Hamad Aleph, is that there's a pushka for birds, but Rav Yehuda is of the opinion, yes, there are 2 pushkas for birds, but neither of them for chova, not for obligation. Why not? Because Rav Yehuda said, well, that's what we're also trying to figure out. We're trying to tackle why not. So all we know, we only get a little piece of information from the Brisa on Nun Hamad Aleph, and that is, I'll just read again, Rav Yehuda Omer lo hayu shofros lekinei chova, there was no pushka for obligatory birds, mimnei atarovis, because of mixture. I'm worried about mixture. That's all the Brisa tells us. So, we were also trying to understand, what did Rabbi Yehuda mean by that? Okay. So, we're tackling our Mishnah, and we're trying to tackle also the Braisa. So, again, what the Gemara thought is, I can solve both dilemmas with one explanation. We don't hold of Ksiva. We simply don't hold of Ksiva. In other words, labeling things is not going to help. So the Gemara says it's not true. It's simply not true. Look, we are now continuing on in Hamid Beis. We're starting with the Meisvei. Meisvei Shoshasei Shofasei B'Mikdash. There were 13 Pushkas in the Beis of Mikdash. V'haya Kasav Aleihem. And this is how they were labeled. So now again, the Mishnah says 13, but really the number we need to focus on is 7. Because 6 are just simply Pushkas for Nedava. So the 7 are Tiklin Chadat and Tiklin Atikin. So 1 and 2 is this year's shekel, last year's shekel. We just went through Masech Tishkal and we know that every Jew is obligated to bring a machzis a shekel every year to the Beis HaMikdash. That is your annual tax to the Beis HaMikdash. That's a flat tax. Everyone just simply gives machzis a shekel. Lo yarbe, lo yamid, no less, no more. Fine. And you have to be current, meaning you have to pay this year's shekel with this year's money. And I'm sorry, and all the karbanos of this year are paid with this year's money, right? The fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's Tiklin Chadatin. That's this year's money. Tiklin Chadatin Aramaic, this year's shekel. And then the second pushka is Tiklin Atikin. Let's say you didn't pay your taxes last year. Let's say you didn't give your machzis a shekel last year. So you still owe. But you're not going to give last year's money to this year's fiscal account. This year's fiscal account has to be separate. So what happens with back taxes? What if you didn't pay last year's money? What do? You put that in the Tiklin Atikin. Now you remember, you go back to the Mishnayos and Shkalim, and the Gemara talked about allocation, how exactly all these monies were distributed. But Tiklin Chadatin is for this year's carbon. Tiklin Atikin is for other funds and other sources, used for other purposes. Then, Pushkas number 3 and 4, Kinim v'gozle ola. So kinim means a pair of birds, and gozle ola just simply means also basically birds. What's the difference between pushka number 3 and pushka number 4? Stay tuned. Eitzim, another pushka for eitzim, meaning that money is going to be directed towards the purchasing of wood, fuel for the fire for the Beis HaMikdash. Levona, next one is going to be for use for the purchasing of frankincense. V'zahav lakaparas. And also gold for the kaparas. Gold literally for the cover of the Aron, but really for the entirety of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In other words, gold needed to be replated, and any fixing in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is done with that seventh pushka. Okay, so those are 7 pushkas. So 1 and 2 are for this year and last year's shekel. 3 and 4 are for birds. 5, 6, and 7 are Eitzim, Lavona, and gold. Okay, so those are the 7 allocations of the 7 pushkas in the Beit HaMikdash. And then Shisha LaNadava. And then she is 6 for the Nadava. And the Gemara here continues quoting the Mishnah and Shkalim. Tiklin Chadatin, Eilu Shkalim Shokol Shana V'Shana. So Tiklin Chadatin, this year's money. Tiklin Atikin, Mishol Shakol Ishtaki, Ishkol Shana Haba. If you didn't give last year's money, so then you're going to put in the second pushka. Kinim, here we go. What is Kinim Hain Torin? Goes Le'ola Hein B'nei Yona, V'kulan Olos Div Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda says that the Pushka of Kinim, that is for the Torah. The Pushka of Gozle Ola, that's for the Ben Yona. Meaning, in the world of birds, there are many kosher birds in the world, but only 2 birds can go on to the Mizbeach. And that is the Torah and the Ben Yona. That's it. So one Pushka is dedicated for the Torah, and the other Pushka is dedicated for the Ben Yona, and it's just simply a function of whatever you donated. Meaning, if in your donation you stipulate Torah, you'll put in Pushka number 3. If in what you stipulate is Ben Yona, you put in Pushka number 4. Fine. Anyway, period. Now, not period, because we're right in the middle of a Mishnah, but stop right there, meaning the Mishnah, the Gemara stops quoting the Mishnah over there, point is made. You want to tell me that Rav Yehuda is not into labeling? Of course he's into labeling. Meaning you have a Mishnah and Shkalim, and you have the opinion of Rav Yehuda being expressed over there, and Rav Yehuda says, you label the Pushkas. So Rav Yehuda is quite comfortable with labeling. So we have to now go a different approach. Meaning it's not, the issue of Tarovis is not an issue of how confused things, and because labeling doesn't help. Labeling does help, even according to Rav Yehuda. Now mind you, by the way, the Gemara right now has a loose end, which is our Mishnah here in Yuma. Meaning our Mishnah in Yuma says that Rav Yehuda does not have 2 stands, but rather has 1 stand. And we're trying to understand why 1 stand, why not 2 stands. And the thought that we had is because he doesn't believe in labeling. Labeling's not going to help. But we just disproven that, so the truth of the matter is, we need to also offer a new pshat in our Mishnah in Yuma. Stay tuned, that's a loose end. We'll tie that loose end later on. In the meantime, however, we're going to try to understand Rav Yehuda's concern regarding the birds. Why does Rav Yehuda say that when a person offers a donated bird, put the money in the pushka, and that's fine, but when it comes to obligatory birds, no money in the pushka. You buy the birds and you hand them right to the kohen. Why no money in the pushka? So Kiyas Rav Dimi Amar b'ma Rava. So Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael, you know, our frequent flyer. So and he quotes in the name of Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Eretz Yisrael, meaning this is what they say in the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. Gzera mishum chasha shemesu ba'alaha. Here's the problem. Problem goes like this. If I had a pushka for chova, so that means that everyone's coming who is obligated to bring a carbon and puts money in the pushka. What it also means is that the kohen at the end of the day or towards the end of the day takes the money from the pushka, counts it up, sees how much money there is, and buys birds corresponding to the amount of money that's there. And we already pointed out yesterday that everyone wraps up their money. So even though we don't know whose money is whose, but we know this money is set aside for his chatas and ola, etc., etc. Okay, here's a problem, says Rav Yehuda. Or again, this is the Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael's explanation of Rav Yehuda. Here's the problem. Everyone just put money in the pushka. And it's all obligation. Which means that every bundle of money is made up of money for Ola and money for Chatos. Okay. Now maybe, perhaps, one of the people who just deposited the money in the pushka died. That means that that money that's in there, that's sitting in the pushka, is money of chata shemesu ba'alaha. We know that if the owner of a carbon chatas dies, so that means that the carbon no longer can be brought on the base of Mikdash. In fact, it's discarded through a method we discussed earlier. So, and that's not only true regarding the animal, that's also true regarding the money as well. So now the Gemara says, here's the concern. Rav Yehuda's concerned that after everyone deposited money in the pushka, maybe one of them died. And if one of them died, so now you have a mixture of tarovis of heter, meaning money that can and needs to be used for the Beis HaMikdash, and iser, money that can't be used as a karban, because that money represents chata shemesu ba'alaha.
There's no bittul by
heter. Okay, perfect question, Danny. Stay tuned. I'll address the question in just a moment. Before addressing the question, however, I'll come back to your question. But you're asking the right question. Umi chayshinan. So the Gemara says, but is this really a concern? V'hatzanan. So first of all, we're worried about somebody dying. Now, it's true. It happens. Probably going to happen to everyone here in this room. But, v'hatzanan. Hashaleh chatas amid medina si'al makriven osa b'cheska shukayim. Meaning for that day, we have a chazaka. Meaning we operate with chazaka. So there are assumptions that we have to make in life. That's true in life, and it's true in halacha. Halacha understands assumptions, and there are built-in assumptions into the offering of a carbon chatas, which is that even if someone sent money from Medina Sayyam, meaning right now he's far away from the Beis HaMikdash, okay, I can't make it there, but I need to bring a carbon chatas, I'll send my money. By the time the money gets to the Beis HaMikdash, now this is not even that day. In other words, the money's probably been in transit now for, I don't know, a week, maybe 2 weeks, whatever. Whatever the case is, so the Kohen Gadol now is looking at the money. His money is set aside for carbon chatas. Now what he's supposed to do is buy the carbon chatas with that money and use it. Is the guy still alive? The Braisa says, you can assume that he's still alive. The Chazaka allows us to assume that the person's still alive. So, Makriven Oso Becheska Shukayim. So, and here, it's even an easier assumption. All you have to assume is that the person who deposited the money that day is still alive. We're going to make that assumption. So once again, we're back to square one. What is Rav Yehuda worried about? Why can't we use a pushka to identify, to be used for obligatory karbanos? Okay. Ela mishum chata shemesu ba'ala avadai. So the Gemara says, oh, okay, I'll tell you what Rav Yehuda is concerned about. Not that if somebody dies, because as we just established, we're not worried about that. He's concerned about the fact that, let's say we know somebody died. Meaning what Rav Yehuda is worried about is not on the occasion of if, but when. Meaning, let's say after everyone deposited money in the pushka, then one of the people who deposited money in the pushka, so he died. Or she died. And we know this to be so. It's not a question of if. It happened. So now I'm looking at a pushka where I know most of the money there is fine. But one lump of money, one bundle of money, is chata shemesu ba'alaha. And so that's the concern of Rav Yehuda. That's why Rav Yehuda does not like using a pushka for obligatory offerings. Not if somebody dies, but when somebody dies. Okay, now, first, the Gemara doesn't address Danny's question, but let's at least address it. because it's a basic question. So what does that mean? It means I have a lot of monies over here, and only one of the monies cannot be used. So this is a classic case of Isser V'Heter. I have that which is prohibited and that which is permitted. And that which is permitted is overwhelmingly more. So why not use the principle of Bittul? So the question is not asked by the Gemara. The Rishonim asked this question, the Achronim asked this question. The general approach of them is that many times in Halacha, the rabbis blocked Bittul. Right, what I coined Bittul blockers. I don't know if the expression is going to really take off. I don't think it's ever going to really take a ascend any type of popularity. But anyway, but basically the Chachamim on occasion blocked Bittul for various reasons, because the item is significant, it's a Davar Chashuv, or because it's something which is generally counted Davar L'Sheish L'Minyan. In other words, not for now. The truth of the matter is when we get to the beginning of Masechta Beitza, which is coming up pretty shortly in the Daf Yomi. So the Gemara over there is going to have a discussion of why sometimes the Chachamim block Bittul. But the Chachamim block Bittul, and maybe perhaps over here we're talking about money, but not only are we talking about money, but money of carbon. So maybe also over here the Chachamim block Bittul. Okay, maybe, perhaps that's one suggestion in terms of why there is no Bittul in the scenario. Gemara says, fine. So here's our story. We have a pushka, we have money in the pushka. One of the people who contributed money died. Since this pushka is designated for chatas, so therefore, one of the monies in the pushka is chatas shemesu ba'alaha. And therefore, the concern is, that's not a concern, it's actual, is that we can't use the monies. Okay. The Gemara says, why don't we do the following? Okay, listen to the Gemara suggestion now. Five lines from the bottom of Nun Hamad Beis. V'nivra abar zozev v'nishta v'maya. Why don't we do the following? Look, the monies there are nondescript monies, meaning we know that each money is contributed by a particular person, but we don't know whose money belongs to whom. Why don't we take four zuzim? Four zuzim, as Rashi points out, just simply is the money it takes to buy a bird. Why don't we take four zuzim out of the pushka and throw it into the ocean? And then make the following statement. You see that money that I just threw into the ocean? You know what that was? That was the money of the person who gave the chatas. Now, statistically speaking, is that so? Probably not. Probably not, but the Gemara says, but why don't we use the following concept to allow us to do this? What concept are we about to employ? The concept of Breira. The Gemara says, why doesn't Breira allow us to now say that retroactively the money that I just picked up is in fact going to belong to the person who died? And allow Breira to make that determination, which quite frankly, on our own, we can't make that determination. But the concept of Breira basically is retroactive selection, meaning retroactive to the time when he actually gave it, this money belongs to him. That is what the Gemara is about to suggest.
Why don't we say that sounds much simpler to answer, let's say the money, right? If you have a bird, I cannot use it for somebody else. But the money, when you take out the money, you don't know it's his money. So basically, right, you could be bringing somebody else's bird, you know.
Money's fungible.
So why don't we just say, because it's money. If it's an animal, we say, right, but
right,
when it's money, we shouldn't say that.
The Gemara, right, the Gemara treats the money, meaning once money is muktash for a carbon chatos, so the Gemara gives it the same status as a karmen chatos itself.
I understand, but right, you cannot bring somebody else's chatos, right?
Right.
So when you take the money, you don't know whose money it is.
Right, okay.
So
I do hear your question. So basically, just a little bit deeper into this discussion over here, just a little bit. Meaning what the Gemara now is going to suggest is the concept of Breira. The use of Breira in this discussion is quite frankly a little bit troubling. Because, again, what is Breira in general? Breira is retroactive selection, meaning Breira basically says, look, I'm going to make a decision now. I have options. I'm going to make a decision now, which I will basically try to argue didn't just occur right now, but in other words, historically went back. I'll give you a classic example where Breira is used. Let's say in the division of an estate, right? I have monies of an estate. And, right, the father died, left over an estate for the kids, and let's say, just to make it simple, there are two kids. Okay, now, the father did not make any type of executive decision when he, no will, in terms of who's getting what. So, in other words, the kids are left to dividing the estate. Okay, and so now, here they have an estate, and they're dividing. And each one is taking their shares of the estate. Okay. At the time when they take their share, it's clearly theirs. Can we make the argument that not only was it theirs at the time when they're dividing, but maybe their decision also goes back retroactive to the time when dad died? Okay? And why would that help us? In certain halachic areas, it helps. Okay? And again, not to get too far off on this discussion. But in other words, what Breira does generally is it basically allows the decision that we're making now to move back retroactively to an earlier point in time. Okay. That's not really what's happening over here. Meaning, let's think about what's happening over here. I got a pushka of money. There's all the people put a bundle of money in the pushka. And now, basically, the Kohanim are going to take the money. Here's a bundle. Okay, let's buy a pair of birds. Offers a carbon. Here's another bundle. We'll take a pair of birds and we'll offer a carbon. Now, again, they don't know who offered, but it doesn't matter. Meaning, each bundle that was given into the pushka is there to buy chatzas and ola. One of the donators died. And the problem now is chatzas shemesu ba'ala. What the Gemara is suggesting is, let's use the principle of Breira to say that whatever monies we take out can be assigned to the person who died. This is not exactly the same application of Breira. This is not an estate being divided and, okay, let's say that now, the way we're dividing now goes back to the time of when the estate dropped from dad to us. It's not, in fact, what is Breira doing over here? It's basically coming to be Matir Tarovis. It's coming to permit a mixture. We don't generally say that Breira allows to permit a mixture. So, just to go a little bit deeper into the Gemara over here, so the Rishonim are bothered by this very question. Meaning, what's Breira's application in this particular case, where basically Breira is being used to permit a Tarovis? So the Tosos, not here, Tosos elsewhere, it's a Tosos in Tamura. So Tosos suggests, well, maybe this case of Tarovis is different, because it's not Isser and Heter combining together what happened over here. When everything was put to the Pushka, everything was Mutter. And then, after everything gets mixed together, then one of it becomes prohibited. And so in this particular case, maybe we'll allow Breira to make the determination. Or maybe another suggestion, and Phil, this gets to your point. And maybe another suggestion is as follows. When everyone deposited the money into the pushka, look, what are they interested in? They don't care that this money goes to this carbon. They just simply want a kapara. In other words, here's the money. I know it's mixed in with other people's money. I don't really care whose money is whose, as long as I get a kapara. So basically, there's almost like a precondition when the money goes in. It doesn't have to be that my money is being served for me. In other words, when all the money goes in, I just simply want the money to apply for my kapara. But he doesn't really care about the money. So there's like a built-in tanai, and because there's like a built-in tanai, so maybe another reason why Breira works in this case is because the money is a little more fungible. Okay, that's another suggestion, another solution in terms of why Breira would be applied over here.
It's as if you're using Breira anyhow in order to predetermine who's getting the funds.
Correct. Right, if you think about it even more, right, every time that money's being taken out, you're using it for one particular person. So that's why the Tanai idea seems to be, it seems to be a workable solution. Because when people are putting money in, they're not really makbin on this money. I just simply want me to get a kapara, and the money obviously just means it's an avenue for me to get the kapara. Okay, good. So now let's come back to the Gemara and let's discuss this now full steam ahead. The Gemara now is arguing that Rabbi Yehuda does not want to use a pushka for a chova, and the reason why, says the Gemara, is because maybe somebody died. Not maybe somebody died, but somebody did in fact die. One of the contributors to the pushka died. And what the Gemara now is arguing is, so here we have a problem because we have monies that are mixed together. Most of the money is good, but one bundle of money is chatzas shemesu ba'ala, and therefore none of it can be used. Why doesn't Rav Yehuda use the concept of Breira, take four zuzim out of the pushka, throw it into the Yama Melach, and be done with it, and let's move on? And the Gemara's answer is, Rav Yehuda leisle Breira, we're four lines from the bottom of Nenheim and Beis, and the Gemara says, because Rav Yehuda doesn't hold a Breira. So, Menalan, and how do I know that Rav Yehuda does not hold a Breira? So the rest of today's daf, basically, is one long run-on sentence, were basically, how do I know that Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to the concept of Breira? We're about to see a Breisa, one of the most oft-quoted Breisas that exist in Shas, and it's rather funny, it's slightly comical, because every time the Breira discussion comes up in Shas, we quote this Breisa, which we're about to see, and then every time, or almost every time, again, my knowledge is not encyclopedic, to say the least, but every time we quote the Breisa, we end up saying, oh no, this Breisa is not about Breira. It's about a different issue. So it's funny. This is like always the preamble. It's the introduction of the Breira discussion. And meanwhile, what we're going to end up saying is, no, this Breisa has nothing to do with Breira. Okay, let's familiarize ourselves with a Breisa that's quoted again and again throughout Shas. So how do I know the Rav Yehuda does not hold a Breira? Minalan, Ilem, Amihad, Nan. So maybe it's from the following. Now the Gemara says, Tanan, it's a Breisa, but okay. Halkecha, Ami, Bein, Akusim. You buy wine from the Kusim. Kusim are the Arameans. Converted, not converted, debatable. Aren't we not allowed to drink wines from the Kusim? Rashi notes that. Rashi says this is before the rabbis made Gzera. Anyway, again, let's stay just focused on the basic point that's about to come up. Erev Shabbosim Chashecha. And what happens now is that it's Friday afternoon and it's right before Shabbos and we're getting close to Shabbos. And the problem now is, as Rashi points out, I can't be Mafish Shumas and Maisos on Shabbos. That's a no-no. So I have to be Mafish Shumas and Maisos before Shabbos, right? We will see this tonight when we say the second parak of Shabbos, right, between Mincha Maariv. So you can't take off Shumas and Maisos on Shabbos. It's an Issa D'Rabbanan. I know, so fine, so take off the Shumas and Maisos before Shabbos. Problem is, as Rashi points out, I have no Kalim. I mean, this is the only jug I have. Okay, so what do I do? I'd like to enjoy the wine on Shabbos. I can't drink the wine without taking off Shumas and Maisos. What do I do? So the Braisa says, here's what you do. Omer. Omeid va'omer. So you stand up and you make the following declaration. Shnei logim shani yasti la'afish harein shuma. Look, let's say there are 100 lug of wine in this particular bottle. Two lugin, which I'm not pouring out right now. I just have nothing to pour it into. So two lugin that I will pour out, that's truma. Truma could really be any amount. The Chachamim demanded that truma be 2%. Sometimes less, sometimes more, but for our purposes, let's say 2%. So therefore, you take two logan out, 2%, two out of 100, and say that's truma. But you don't pour it out; you leave it there because you have nothing to pour it into. Next, asara maisa rishon. Then take out another. Again, take out. No, we're not taking anything out. Designate another 10 logan as maisa rishon. Okay, Tosus over here is bothered. In other words, the numbers over here could be imprecise because. Isn't it 10%? And if I took 2 out, doesn't that leave me 98? And it shouldn't be 9.8? And Tosfos discusses that, and good. And that's a discussion. Fine. But, and then Tisha Meister Sheni. And then take out another 9 as Meister Sheni. Fine. Umechal. Now, when it comes to the Meister Sheni, here's what you can do. You see, when it's opposed to Truman, as opposed to Meister Rishon, I can only designate. That's all I can do. With the Meister Sheni, I could transfer the Kedusha onto money. And that's good, and Rashi explains that. And not only is that good, that's better. Because you've solved the Meister Sheni dilemma. In other words, there is no longer any Meister Sheni in the bottle. So all that's left in the bottle is Truma Meister. And then, show Simiyad. And now, Shabbos, enjoy. Enjoy yourself. Meaning, drink the bottle. Now, don't drink the entire bottle, because the last, right, you got to leave over 12 lugan at the end as truma and as meiser. And a non-Kohen who drinks truma, chai misa. So don't do that. But in other words, your designation will work. And whatever's left at the end is going to be truma meiser. Now, how do you know what's going to be left at the end? Breira will be your guide. Breira will allow you to say, whatever's left at the end, Hovra Hadavar Lamafer retroactively was determined at the beginning.
But in a way, it's not a class prayer because you're designated. You're not physically separating, but you're all designated. Rera is you actually going, looking backwards and saying, back then, right. This is what should have been.
But you need Rera because your designation right now is you're pointing to a general area. There's no way that you will know at the time of designation which wines are going to be left over. It's a liquid.
But you recognize, you're acknowledging the concept right there. Though.
And so it's wonderful. Your acknowledgement is wonderful.
Ten lugim or two lugim.
It's wonderful, but you don't know at the time when you're pointing. You literally do not know which ten lugim is going to be left over. That determination will only be left at the end. But at the end, isn't that a little too late? Meaning, didn't you drink it already? Hovra hadavala mafreya. So that means that we're going to go back in time to the point where you pointed to it and said, this is truma, and that means, now moving forward, it's whatever was left at the end. It's Breira. This is Breira. So divrei Rabbi Meir, so that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Now, what do we see? Rabbi Meir holds the Breira. Good. Turn page. That was easy. Thank you. A special thank you to Tosfos for really getting us back up to speed. So, Nun Vav Amud Beis. So, Rav Meir holds the Breira. Rav Yehuda, Rav Yossi, Rav Shimon, Osrim. And three Tanaim say, no, this does not work. Period. That's the end of the Breisa. So, now, of those three Tanaim who say that it does not work, included in that is Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yossi, and Rav Shimon. We're going to focus on Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says it doesn't work. Why not? Presumably, it doesn't work because he doesn't hold the Breira. Good. Now that's really what we want to say. Because again, the question became, why not take four coins out of the pushka, throw it into the ocean, and therefore get rid of the chata shemesu ba'alah, and how do we know which four coins to take out? We don't. Well, whichever four coins we take out will be, through the principle of Breira, belong to the person who died. And yet the Gemara says, we can't do that, why not? So the Gemara argued because Rav Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira. And doesn't this Breisa show us that Rav Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira? So the Gemara says, Amain Breira, Mimai. The Gemara says, nah, I don't think so. I don't think this Breisa is indicative of the fact that Rav Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira. Dilmashani Hasam, Kidiktani Taima. So the Gemara says, because continue reading the Breisa. And you will see in the ensuing discussion of the Breisa, the issue over here is not Breira. The issue over here is risk-taking. Are you aversive to risk? Or are you comfortable with a little bit of risk? I know it's probably a conversation you may have had, but in other words, in financial planning, but in halacha, this is exactly the discussion. So, kediktani taima, amar lo l'rebi meir yata modisham yivaka hanod, v'nimsa shoset tval mafreya. So they say to Rabbi Meir, wow, you're such a risk taker. Meaning, I'm okay with this whole concept of Breira. Meaning, in principle, I believe it works, but let's think about this. You're drinking the wine, you get to the end, you stop, you leave over 12 lugan at the end. Okay, good, wonderful. And then what happens if the bottle falls down and breaks? I thought of the irony myself. I'm with you. I hear that. What Ben said is that Rav Meir is generally speaking somebody who is aversive to risk. Meaning Rav Meir, the Gemara's terminology is choshesh lemiyuta. Rav Meir is someone who does not, who takes every consideration, even if it's a small one, into account. And so here, Rav Meir is the one who's basically says, I'm okay. I'm okay with a little bit of risk. So Ben thought of it. Okay, I'm happy to say I thought of it as well. The Gemara doesn't address that issue, but fine. Something to consider. Anyway, so they say to Rabbi Meir, well, what if the bottle breaks? And then that Truma Meister that you left at the end now is not there. And now what? Now it turns out that you didn't take off Truma Meister. And now it turns out that everything that you drank previously was Tevel. Drinking Tevel is a Chiv Misa, Misa B'dei Shamayim. So aren't you worried about that? And Rav Meir very nonchalantly says, "Va'amar lahem lechishi yavake." Yeah, you know when I'll worry about it? When it happens. When we get to that bridge, we'll cross it. In other words, but no, I'm not worried. Meaning, it'll be fine. The 12 lugan he'll save at the end will be intact, and let's not worry about it. So in other words, the issue over here is not an issue of Breira. Every time I'm mentioned in this Breisa is open to the idea of Breira. It's just a question of when we're left at the end, aren't you worried that maybe something will happen? So it's not a Breira issue. So the Gemara says, okay, so now where are we? What we're trying to determine now is, how do I know that Rav Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira? So the Gemara says, okay, try attempt number two. So the Amalem Cheshivaka, Elamid Dniayo, so the Gemara says it's taught. We can see that Rav Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira based on a Breisa of Ayo. Ayo is the name of Atana. The Dni Ayo. Ayo taught the following Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Ein adamasna al shnei dvarim ke'echad ela im ba'chacham lemizrach, eruv lemizrach, lemarav, eruv lemarav. Aval akan lakan lo. Let's get ourselves oriented, familiarized right? Let's go back to Erevin. Remember in Erevin we discussed how you can only walk 2,000 amas outside of your tchum. Let's say that you're not in a city. Let's just make this nice and simple. That you're living right now in an island or in a, or by yourself. And you just simply, you can only walk 2,000 amas to the east or 2,000 amas to the west. I mean, you could do both actually. But that's it. And let's say before Shabbos, you now have the ability to hear a shir from a Talmud Chacham. Now, the Talmud Chacham may be coming into the east, and that means that you want to extend your ability to walk to the east another 2,000 amos. Or maybe the Talmud Chacham is to the west, and you want to extend. So how do you extend on Shabbos? By making an Erev Tchum. And by making an Erev Tchum, essentially what you're doing is you're moving your point of center. Your point of center no longer becomes where you're standing, but it's now going to be wherever you want to make it. As long as you can walk there on Shabbos. So you can make your point of center 2,000 amos to the east, and that is by before Shabbos, going to that point before Shabbos, putting food in a basket on that point, then making that your new Makom Shvisa, or you can go 2,000 amos to the west, and you can make your new Makom Shvisa 2,000 amos to the west. And by doing so, you can extend your tchum either 2,000 amos to the east or 2,000 amos to the west. But of course, well, you can only move your point of center in one direction. You cannot move your point of center two directions, obviously. In other words, basically, you're making a new point of center. Fine. What if you don't know, meaning before Shabbos, I think I either need to go to the east or I think I need to go to the west. So what Ayo teaches in a Braisa is that if in the event that it's the Talmud Chacham, and he's either coming to the east or coming to the west, so what you could do is you can make set up to a Reuven, right? And you can basically make the following stipulation. Im ba chacham la mizrach, if the chacham's coming to the east, a Reuven la mizrach. So I want my Erev to work for my east Erev to work. And la marav, a Reuven la marav. And if he's coming from the west, so then I want my west Erev to work. Avalakan ulakan lo. But not if we're going to go in both directions. Now, what does that mean? V'havinan ba'mayshna. Lekan u'lekan, delo. De'ein breira. So the Gemara says, but I can't set up both Erevin, and then at a later point in time say, you know, whichever one I want, that's the one I'm going to use. That you can't do. But the Gemara says, okay. Oh, I'm sorry, and why not? Because we don't hold a breira. I mean, in other words, a decision cannot be made retroactively. I have to make that decision going into Shabbos. An important point, which I didn't mention yet, and that is that the Erev Tchum can only be effective, the establishment of the Erev Tchum only comes during the Bein HaShemashos period going into Shabbos. And that's it. And so if I learn the information on Shabbos, I can't say, well, retroactively, you know, the one I'm choosing is the one I need. Doesn't work. So the Gemara says, okay, but lemizrach umarav nami in breira. So the Gemara says, but in the first case of this braisa, where basically it's one Talmud Chacham coming in one of two directions, I just don't know which direction, so I set up two Erev Tchums, why shouldn't work also? It doesn't rely on breira. V'amar Rav Yochanan kishekvar b'chacham. So Rav Yochanan says, no. In the first case of the braisa, we didn't totally understand it. Here's what happened in the first case of the braisa. The Chacham came. I only have a little bit of information that was given to me. Talmud Chacham came, you have an ability to go here on Shabbos, but you need to set up a tchum. Well, is the Talmud Chacham to the east of me or to the west of me? I don't know that information, but it's not because I'm going to make a decision on Shabbos, I just simply don't know that information. He came already. This is Rav Yochanan's explanation of the Braisa. So what I'll do is I'll just simply set up an Erev to the east and to the west, and I'm not using Breira. In other words, I don't need Breira. I just need to know which direction he came. So in other words, they set it up, and I basically, as a tanai, as a condition, whichever one he's in is the one I'm going to use. That's not breira. That's just simply a lack of, it's a chisarn of information. It's a chisarn yediyah. But in other words, whichever one I need is the one I'm going to use. But the information, in other words, the decision was made already. I just simply don't know. As opposed to the second case in the braisa, where I set up two eruvs, and look, I'm going to choose. In other words, there's a Talmud Chacham to the east and there's a Talmud Chacham to the west. And you know what? Whichever I'm in the mood for. Talmud Chacham to the east speaks about halacha. Talmud Chacham to the west, he speaks more in drush. You know what on Shabbos, when I wake up in the morning, I'll see what I'm in the mood for. And whichever one I'm in the mood for, that's the Erev I'm going to choose. That's Breira that you can't do. Fine. Now that we laid out the Braisa, so now we see, according to Rav Yochanan's explanation of the Braisa, the author of the Braisa doesn't hold the Breira. And the author of the Braisa is Ayo, but who is he quoting? Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Braira. Okay, good. That was a long run-on sentence, but basically now the Gemara has made its point. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold the Braira. So now that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold the Braira, now we can go back to Daf Nun Hey. We can really go back to Daf Nun Hey Amud Aleph and answer now the original question of the Daf, which was, Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't have a pushka for Chova, for birds of Chova, because when somebody dies, that's it, we're stuck. It's not if somebody dies, but when somebody dies, we're stuck, because one of the monies is going to be Chata Shemesu Ba'alaha. Well, Gemara is bothered. Why not just take one of the monies out of the Pushka, throw it into the Yama Melech, and use the principle of Breira to say retroactively, that belonged to the person who gave it? Answer, Rav Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira, based on the Breira that we just learned together. Period. Okay, now that's not the end of the Daf. We have a little bit more to go. Let's finish up the Daf. But that is the that is the point made. So the Gemara says, okay, now that we made the point, we have a loose end that we need to tie up. Yom Kippur, Kohen Gadol, in the Heichal. Rav Yehuda says, not two stands, but one stand. What's wrong with two stands? So our first suggestion was, well, because he doesn't like labeling things. He doesn't believe labeling things is going to help. We rejected that, remember? We rejected that on the Amud Aleph. So we have a loose end we need to tie up. V'hashta darmin l'Rav Yehuda ein breira haksiva islay. Rav Yehuda doesn't hold the breira. Good. Rav Yehuda believes in labeling. Also fine. So Yom Kippur nami navitrei v'nichtav alayu. So why not in Yom Kippur use two stands and label? This is a stand for the blood of the bull. This is a stand for the blood of the goat. Makes life easier, doesn't it? Mishum chulsha de kohen gadol lava daite. So the Gemara says, in general, Rav Yehuda is a believer in labeling, but not for the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Why not? Kohen Gadol's tired. He pulled an all-nighter. Every Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol goes and does the Avodah, and he's sleep-deprived. And because of the sleep deprivation, the Chachamim recognized it. They knew that he's tired, and it's going to be hard for him to focus. And so therefore, if there are two stands, and even if they're labeled, it may not. He may get confused.
Isn't he more likely to be confused if there are known labels?
So de'ilo temahachi. So the Gemara says, one second. I don't know if I have an answer to your question, but just let's just finish the thread. De'ilo temahachi blok sivanami hainafish vayzuter. And the Gemara says, and look, let's be honest with each other. In other words, there are two bowls. One has the blood of the bull, and the other one has the blood of the goat. Meaning, even if it weren't labeled, like we could tell them apart. Now, I'm no blood expert. But the Gemara notes there are a couple of basic differences. First of all, the blood of the bull, there is a lot of blood. The blood of the goat, there's not a lot of blood. So just volume already is going to be a determinant. Now what do you tell me? That maybe when he collected the blood from the bull, he didn't collect all the blood? But that's not true. So first of all, we saw this just a couple of days ago in the Daf, where it's necessary to collect all the Dam HaNefesh. So the blood of the bull is a lot. And you can't just simply collect a little bit of the blood. And the Gemara says, and maybe you want to argue, well, maybe after having collected all the blood of the bull, maybe some of it spilled out. Which is unlikely, but let's even entertain that so. The Gemara says, the blood of the bull is very thick, it's very red. The blood of the goat is a lighter shade of red. So not only in volume are they different, but in color they're different as well. So even without all the labeling, can't you obviously see the difference between the two? So again, with the sleep deprivation of the Kohen, even though there are some very simple telltale signs of which blood belongs to the bull and which is to the goat, but he's tired and he'll get confused. So even if I label, Rav Yehuda is a believer in labeling. He likes labeling. The Mishnah Shkalim told us that he likes labeling. But because of the sleep-deprived Kohen Gadol, so therefore the labeling for the Kohen Gadol may not work. Period. Okay, so that's why. And why is one stand better? So
because you put down the blood on the floor.
Right. So with one stand, right, he's got to, in other words, he's got to always be holding a cup of blood. So I guess from that standpoint.
No, you have to put down the blood of the bull.
Right.
And then pick up the other one. Because it has to do with the right hand.
No, you have to. You're going to have to. No, if it's one stand, you're going to have to pick up one and put the other one down, if it's one stand.
Right.
You can do it with the left hand.
Right, correct. In other words, I guess picking up, you have to say it. I mean, you're, otherwise, you know, your question's too good. But you have to say that picking up with the left hand is, you know, not part of the avoda. The sprinkling is going to have to be done with the right. Okay. Anyway, so that's where we stand right now. So chosha de kohen gadol. All right. So on the machlokas of the Mishnah, the long discussion in the Gemara, nearly two dapim of Gemara, on the discussion of the Gemara regarding why the Tanakhama says two stands and Rabbi Huda says one stand. In terms of an explanation, so the Gemara basically just gave us an explanation. The Tanakhama of our Mishnah basically says it's the easiest way to identify which is which. One, the two stands, they're both going to be labeled. And Rabbi Huda says, look, I'm worried about the sleep deprivation of the Kohen, and so therefore, always keep a blood of bull in his hands at all times. And the way we're going to force that is by only having one stand, not two stands. Fine. Hahu, right, we'll just finish to the two dots. Hahu, denach is coming to Rava. So you have a shlich tzibur getting diving for the Amud. Right, these stories I'm just sharing with you, you know this to be so, you've been with the daf long enough, these stories never go well. Whenever the Gemara tells a story about a shlich tzibur davening for the Amud in front of an Amora, so you know it's a start of something happened. There's going to be a criticism. So here this is in fact so. Now obviously Rava's an Amora, so this is now no Beis Hamikdash, no Avoda. So Avoda now comes in the form of Tefillah, meaning like what happens with us. We go to the shul. And during Musaf, in the middle of Musaf, we don't break, that's not the right way to say it, but we insert the Avoda into Musaf, so we basically go through the Avoda Yom Kippurim. Now, the way we do it nowadays is we do it al yidei piyut, meaning a paitan put it together for us so that we're doing the Avoda through poetry. Makes it hard for us. I mean, to be honest with each other for just a moment, meaning the poetic liturgy that we use nowadays doesn't give us like a nice, easy, you know, it's not like opening up a Rambam and reading. Here's one step, here's the next step. But okay, it's part of tefillah, and tefillah is done in song and poetry. What do? You read the Rambam?
It's much
clearer. So how come the Nach is coming to Rava? So here, the Shliach Sibor is in front of Rava. Amar, and this is now how he's saying the Avodah, the Shliach Sibor. Now, remember, in the good old days, a lot more ad-libbing, right? And nowadays, we have a sitter, we have a standard text, and so for us, we pretty much know what we're going to say. The Shliach Sibor has more than a good idea. It's written. But in the good old days, though, there was room for a little bit of ad-libbing, and the Shliach Sibor said the following, Amar yatzav inecha kanasheni shebeecha. So he's describing now, the Shliach Sibor is describing how the Kohen Gadol places the blood on the second stand. Second stand, so if there's a second, obviously that means there's a first. Which means that he's holding, this Shliach Sibor is holding like the Tanakhama. Nato dama par, v'iniak dama se'ir. He takes the blood of the bull, and he puts down the blood of the goat. Well, why does he have to pick it up first, if there are two stands? Can't he put both of them down? Amar le, so Rava says to the Shliach Sibor, I didn't like your nusach. Now your tunes are great, and I'm sure, I just didn't like your nusach. Chadak Rabbanan v'chadak Rav Yehuda. Because he started off by saying that there are two stands, and you're going like the Tanakhama of our Mishnah. But then you said, and he picked one up, and he put the other one down. What? That's not the Tanakhama, that's Rav Yehuda. So Ema, so here's what you should say. Next time you daven for the Amud, so here's how it should be. Hiniach dam asir v'natzol dam apar. You put down the blood of the goat and you pick up the blood of the bull. So in other words, corrected him for next year. And that wasn't so bad. Small correction from Rava to the Shliach Sibor. Okay, because the Shliach Sibor was inconsistent when describing the Avoda. He first described it like the Tanakam and then he went to Rav Yehuda. All right. Okay, we finished up today. We clarified two issues today. Clarified the issue of how do you understand Rabbi Yehuda regarding the Tarovis. Why not have a pushka for the kinei chova, for the birds of obligation? And the answer is because one may die. One of the donators may die. Not if, but when one of the donators die. So you'll have a Tarovis, you'll have a mixture of Issa Heter, and he doesn't subscribe to the concept of Brera, and therefore you're going to lose all the coins in the pushka. So that's why he doesn't have a pushka for kinei chova. The other issue is why two stands? Why not? What's the machlokas in the Mishnah between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda? Two stands versus one stand. So it has nothing to do with labeling. Rav Yehuda is a believer in labeling, but it has to do with the fact that Rav Yehuda believes that the Kohen Gadol, because of his sleep deprivation, because he's tired, so he's going to get confused. By having one stand, you're always going to have to force the Kohen Gadol to be holding a blood bowl in the hand, and that'll be help him be more cognizant and conscious of which blood he's holding.